Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Simon Morato, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right, we got a new guest host today. Welcome to Simon. This is the first time you've been on the Fat Guys podcast, and we've gone international again. A couple weeks ago, we had Andrew Robinson from Kingston, Jamaica, on the air, and now we've got Simon. He comes literally from the other side of the world, from Perth, Australia, which is the capital of... Is it like famous for anything?
It is famous for being the home of Heath Ledger and some other famous actors. It's the capital of Western Australia, and it's a very nice place. That's kind of...
Is that actually, like, is it you say Western Australia, or is it just... I mean, is there a governmental body that's west of Australia?
Western Australia. WA. Uh-huh. That's the best way to kind of refer to it. Yeah.
Okay.
The colonies, so that's like, what we call it.
It's sort of like upstate New York.
Sure.
Okay. It makes no sense to you, maybe? I don't know.
The reference is, it's kind of like hands across America, but international right now, so... Okay.
Great. What's funny is the one of the first times that you and I, because we follow each other on Twitter for a while, and you sent me a tweet, and you're like, this is where when you really kind of popped up on my radar outside of just like people I follow generally in the blogosphere community, and you're like, I found this video box of Saw 3 with your quote on the top of it.
That's right.
Do you remember that?
Because I watched Saw 3. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is terrible. This is a really awful movie. And then I looked at the endorsement on the front of the DVD cover, and it was from none other than Kevin Carr. And I believe I scanned it and sent it over to you for confirmation.
Yeah, because it was like, it's like distributed by Sony in Australia.
Yes.
And I got an email from this random email once from this guy, and he must have gotten my quote off of Rotten Tomatoes. And he's like, hey, can we use this quote? And the quote was, it's not for the squeamish.
Which is accurate. That's, you know.
Well, that's so funny because that's not a good quote. It's not a bad quote. It's just saying, hey, look, if you're going to throw up, you're not going to want to watch this movie.
It's like quoting a critic saying, this is the third film of the Saw saga.
And it was so funny because I'm like, when the guy emailed me, he was like, can we have permission to quote you on a cover box? I'm like, heck yeah, man.
And that's when you know you've made it.
I know, it's like you feel like so awesome when you actually get a quote on something, and then nobody else notices. They're just like, "Who's that guy?" You know, and so I asked him to send me a copy, and he never did. I said, "Can you send me?" Because I'm like, I'm not in Australia, I'm in Columbus, Ohio. I mean, it's again literally the other side of the world. We're like 12 hours apart. So, but no, you sent me a screen capture of it, which was really awesome.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I hope to one day get on my own kind of DVD box set. I kind of just walk down the foyer of the cinema at the moment with a magic marker, just putting my reviews on the posters.
Just writing out the best film of the year since Saw 7.
Exactly. It's public service.
Well, that's actually a great idea. He said, I've been quoted on this one poster in this one theater in my hometown.
Well, thanks to Twitter, you can now photograph it and keep it online for posterity.
That's right. That's right. Let's move on. Say how to get a hold of us first. Let's do the show. You've got fatguysatthemovies.com, where you can download us and subscribe and everything. You can go to iTunes and subscribe there, and you just search Fat Guys at the Movies, and our whole chamber of podcasts shows up. You can go to facebook.com/fgatm. which is Fat Guys at the Movies on Facebook. And then there's fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. We don't have a voicemail. We're recording a little early this week, so we might get one late, and then it'll go on next week. But Simon, tell us who you are and what you do and how to find you and that sort of thing.
I'm the sort of critic and editor for quickflix.com.au, which is kind of the Australian version of Netflix. I run the editorial sites, all the reviews and interviews there, but I also co-host the Trending Cinema podcast with another lovely American, John Tilton, and I also co-host the Podcasting Couch, which is a Perth-based podcast that we do here, but you can find those both on iTunes.
What is that? I mean, you say it's Perth based. Is it like specifically about like things happening in Perth?
No. We just record in a Perth recording studio, for instance, as opposed to Trending Cinema, which we do over Skype. But no, we talk about all the classics, all the big films, and all the stuff that movie geeks love.
Ah, yes.
That's what they're after.
That's right. Well, that's good. Well, no, the reason I ask is because when you said it's birthday sound podcast, I'm like, well, is it something that somebody, you know, like from Columbus, where I'm from,
sure,
would be interested in listening to, or is it be like, oh, at this local theater, this
No. Absolutely. I'm just used to saying that because I'm such a kind of cross-platform whore that I'm over every sort of possible medium there is. I like to differentiate them slightly. So if you're looking for a movie podcast with Australian accents like mine, try the podcasting couch.
See, that's what stupid Americans. It's like you come on the show and it immediately makes us sound cooler because it's just like we were talking about this off the air about, you know, what your accent is, because again, to dumb Americans like us, it's this Australian-ish accent that could be Australian, it could be British, could be South African. You know, I mean, it could be anywhere that has that sort of British roots to it.
It's just like wrong American, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely like, it's definitely not like German. We know that. But it sounds, you immediately sound more intelligent than I do.
That seems, well, that,
which may be the case.
Well, thank you very much, but that's all, give the accent all the credit for that one, I promise you.
So you're just like, that's just, I mean, it's not like you've done anything special. That's just how you talk.
Yeah, exactly. It's literally how my lips move. I have no control over it.
He grew up that way, so.
So don't judge me, people, please.
let's move on to the movies we're going to review really quickly. Actually, we're going to have to cram. I'm going to play these back to back because we're going to talk about these trailers back to back because we've seen neither of these. Because they didn't screen it for us in America or Australia. We have Tyler Perry's Madea in Tyler Perry's Madea's Big Happy Tyler Perry Family. And this is another gospel drama with the gun-toting Madea.
Mabel, can you do something for me, baby?
Yes.
Do one thing for
yes.
me. Can you just hold me one more time?
What bring you by here?
I just wanted to have a nice dinner, everybody together.
You need to help her with her kids. Can't nobody bring a family together like you can. No.
Hallelujah!
Byron, I want my money.
What are you talking about?
Byron!
Stop! Listen, we ain't together, okay?
And then we also have Water for Elephants, in which Robert Pattinson brings his smell the fart acting to this period drama about love, betrayal, and elephants.
I'm just looking for work, sir.
Who's the woman who works with the horses?
That ain't no woman. That's the boss's wife, and she don't talk to nobody, and you don't talk to her.
You do right by me. I'll show you a life most suckers can't even dream of.
Any living creature needs to know who's in charge. They can sense when a man's power is full strength, when a man's power is not.
Well, those are the trailers for those. Real quick, before we go on, are you going to see either of these? Do you have any interest at all?
I absolutely have interest in seeing Water for Elephants. I think there are, you know, outside of Robert Pattinson, some very interesting elements to that film. But
and very interesting elephants.
Yeah, yes. Well, apparently, according to Wikipedia, the elephant is the fourth credited cast member above Hal Holbrook. So that's some impressive elephant acting in there. But wow. I have to tell you, we've never had a Tyler Perry movie come out in Australia.
I mean, they don't even show up in Australia? That's
not at
that
all.
Blows my mind.
Yeah, I think one or two have come to DVD maybe, but and you know, I am aware of Tyler Perry and Madea and the character, but I've never seen any of the films, and I kind of have to ask you, you know, what is the phenomenon here?
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll talk about that when we get back from the break, because we gotta go and then we'll talk about these films. And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are in the second segment. We're going to be talking a little bit about Tyler Perry's, the Tyler Perry phenomenon, as Simon had put it, and the Robert Pattinson / elephant phenomenon. from Water for Elephants. You had asked about Tyler Perry. They've never opened in Australia?
No, none of the films have opened in cinemas. One or two have gone straight to DVD, and I don't believe the Madea ones have. And, I mean, you have to kind of forgive me. I'm not fully clued into the whole
pretty
saga.
Much all of them are Madea, yeah. With the exception of the Why Did I Get Married films, all of them are Madea movies.
Okay.
Even stuff like Diary of a Mad Black Woman, it's a Madea movie. It's a uniquely American phenomenon. I mean, it's like these are movies that are made for a very specific audience, which are the generally Christian based African American female audience more than anything else. But guys will go see them too. But it's really aimed at African American females. And Tyler Perry's, I believe he's from Atlanta, I think is where he's from. So he really kind of clicks with that sort of, Atlanta's a southern city, so it really clicks with the southerners, but it also clicks, it's a little bit farther north, and it has like sort of this middle mentality in terms of the states. So, I mean, it just really, it's aimed at the general population of Christian African Americans. And they're wildly popular here. I mean, they do incredibly well. They're all the same, though. They're gospel plays. They're gospel plays in the sense where it's just really heavy melodrama that it's like almost over the top, and then it's balanced by this just really wacky kind of 70s sitcom-ish
right.
kind of incredibly insane black family. And I mean, they serve a purpose. They serve an audience. I don't have anything against them. They're obviously they're not for me. They're not my kind of film. But that is that's what they are. This is going to be the same thing. I mean, it's more of the same from Tyler Perry is what I think you're going to get here.
Sure. I mean, it's kind of interesting though. I mean, cinema should be a communal experience, and everyone deserves a type of movie that they can latch on to. I mean, so you know, that's all fine. But I don't know. I guess. What we kind of read here in Australia about the character, it always comes with the criticism as well. And, you know, yep. Spike Lee is certainly not a fan, and there's always kind of this reaction, because the film's normally open to like 30, 40 million in the US.
In America, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's just kind
except
of interesting.
Except for his last movie he did was For Colored Girls, which was not a Madea. I guess it was another one, another Madea movie. And he, this one was very heavy, and it wasn't a Madea movie. It was very heavy on the melodrama, and that's all it was. It didn't have the wacky, weird element. So, it's just, I mean, these are really heavy, and like every bad thing that can happen to the people in these movies, it happens. And you're just, that to me, it is over the top, and it is overdone at times. And that's my big complaint about Tyler Perry movies. But you know, heck, you know, again, they're not made for me. So, yeah, I think it's going to be. You look for the same thing. It's going to open at 30 million or more, and it's going to be a big hit in America.
Well, he knows what he's doing. I mean, if nothing else, you can't not say that.
He's churning them out. Now on to Water for Elephants. This movie I have no interest in whatsoever. And there's a screening, but I'd have to go out of town, so I'm not seeing it. It's a movie that my mom in her book group would love.
See, I kind of like the book group movies, and maybe that makes me a bit lame, but, you know, I was all for Never Let Me Go.
No, hey, wear it as a badge, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, and I was excited for The Lovely Bones, and I was quickly proven wrong about being excited for that. This one seems kind of interesting, though, and we do get this in Australia in about 3 weeks' time, and my screening's next week, so I haven't seen it either, but like I was kind of saying earlier, there are enough elements here to keep me interested. I mean, Francis Lawrence is directing, and I'm a big fan of I Am Legend, up until, you know, the last 5 minutes, like most people.
Sure. Okay.
Christoph Waltz is in it. That's awesome. Hal Holbrook. Paul Schneider, who should be in everything. So, you know, take...
Paul Schneider. Not Paul Schaefer.
Not Paul Schaefer, who... Paul Schaefer should be in everything. David Letterman. I mean, just, like, off to the side. Like, just cut to him, like...
Just play it and be like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, like...
I like that,
almost
Dave.
Like a Greek chorus for all films. I'd love that. I know Paul Schneider, who's from... he was in... the David Gordon Green movie, All the Real Girls, and people probably know him from Parks and Recreation at the moment.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, Robert Pattinson, I mean, the guy can't act, but I'm just basing that upon the Twilight films. I don't know if you've seen him in anything else.
He can't act. I mean, he was in that movie, Remember Me, last year, which was one of my worst. I think it actually topped the list of my worst movie of the year. And he can, let's put this, he can do the brooding smolder. And if you look at him, I was with a friend and we were seeing another movie a couple weeks ago to screening, and the Water for Elephants trailer showed up. And I said to him, I go, watch this movie. And every time they cut to Robert Pattinson, it looks like he's smelling a fart. And he does, because he's kind of got his face pulled back and his nostrils flared. And now now that I've said that, you're going to watch a trailer and you're just going to be like, it's ruined, Kevin.
It's a bit like when you listen to music and you listen to when they breathe in.
Oh, yeah.
When, like, singers do that. And then that's all you can hear.
Yeah.
Smell the fart. So from the Joey Tribbiani School of Acting.
Yeah, I mean, he's so bad. And, I mean, he's not that he's a terrible actor, but he's not. His fame from the Twilight movies, I think, have gone to his head. I mean, he thinks he's a bigger deal than what he really is. And I'm sorry, he's not. He's just some two-bit British actor who lucked into a role that the role is bigger than him, you know. And I mean, he's also playing against Kristen Stewart with her... in a sort of, like, you know, choppy breathing acting that she does. So, I mean, it's not hard to, like, rise above her level.
See, I think she's good. She's bad. No one walks out of Twilight clean. Like, no one walks out of Twilight going, well, they could have saved it. But I think Kristen Stewart
Everybody's
is a
tainted.
Good actress.
Well, here's the thing. She was, up until she did Twilight, because she did a lot of great stuff. I mean, even, you know, and funny, I had a chance to interview her a couple years ago before she was even cast in Twilight. She was really down to earth, and she was really cool, and she'd done a lot of neat stuff when she was a teenager. And then she hit Twilight, and the fame went to her head, where she's like, well, right. You know, and both she and Pattinson were directed by Catherine Hardwicke, who's a terrible director, in my opinion.
Oh, awful.
She doesn't know how to handle actors. And then that galvanized it for anybody who came later, you know, like David Slade and stuff like that, you know, people who are like, they can't direct them because they're like, well, this is Bella, and this is the way audience want Bella, so this is how I'm going to act as Bella. And same thing for Edward. So, I don't know. But this movie, like I said, it's a book club movie. And I can see where it appeals to, like, somebody like my mom. But I just have no interest in it.
It would have been interesting if it wasn't Robert Pattinson, and we weren't all looking at this like a Robert Pattinson vehicle, and I had some interesting indie actor, I can't think off the top of my head, but some other actor that had some cred and a good kind of back catalogue to his name, I think this would be a much more appealing film. You know, it's got an interesting director, a solid kind of ensemble cast, but you look at it and
somebody
it's just like this is lame
Joseph
Robert Pattinson.
Gordon-Levitt. Yeah. Like if you had like Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, absolutely. Or someone of that kind of generation would have been just interesting, and it just looks like soppy romantic smell the fart movie.
You're gonna watch it, and you're gonna see it in theaters next week, and you're gonna be like, God, Kevin.
I'm gonna look for that quote of yours on the DVD release.
That's right, written in Sharpie, random DVDs, and I'll sneak into the warehouse. Both movies get a preemptive suck from me because they have to contractually. They didn't screen them yet. And then the last one we're going to talk about, and we're going to spill over into the next segment as well, is African Cats, which is the latest from Disney Nature, in which Samuel L. Jackson narrates a documentary about these motherfucking cats on this motherfucking plane.
Experience the incredible true story and extraordinary adventures of two families striving to make a home in the wildest place on earth. African Cats.
I have to say that joke, that plain joke, and if you notice, it's plain, plain, you don't hear the difference. Of course, I've obviously Snakes on the Plane reference. But that I stole that joke from Paul Young, a.k.a. Walwus on Twitter. So this one, we've only got about 20 seconds. Are you going to go check this one out?
You know, sure. I mean, if Samuel L. Jackson's narrating it, it sounds like it'll be pretty hardcore, so why not?
Hardcore, just G-rated Disney movies. It's like, watch the. They need to get the guy who does those audio bits on YouTube to do... the narration for the next Disney Nation movie.
What's that? I'm not familiar with this. And maybe we're going to run out of time.
I'll let you know in that other segment. We're ready to go.
Hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are in the third segment, the infamous middle segment. We were talking a little bit about African Cats, just real briefly, with Samuel L. Jackson narrating it, which I think is awesome that he's narrating a Disney film.
It is good, but I mean, he wouldn't turn it down either.
No, you know, he'd be so like, look at those badass cats on that plane. They're eating that warthog or whatever.
Yeah, I assume he's just yelling the entire time. There's no actual narrative going on. He's just kind of commenting and screaming.
It's just like, it'll be like 15 minutes of footage that has no narration, and all of a sudden he's like, well, damn, look at that! I do the worst Samuel L. Jackson impression.
You don't want to hear mine. It's a bit too Australian. But
you want to hear my Australian Samuel L. Jackson impression?
I would love that.
No, you don't. Nobody wants to hear
it. I can't imagine that being offensive to anyone.
I think I get it, everybody. Can I make him a paraplegic as well?
And then
please.
I can
just sort of like alienate another demographic. We found out the name. It's Randall. Randall is the guy I want to have narrate the next Disney Nature documentary. And if you don't know who Randall is, I sent a couple videos to Simon over the break. He's of course the guy on YouTube who basically narrates over these nature documentaries, and it's like he has the crazy nasty ass honey badger. Did you enjoy listening to any of this? You said you were disturbed by the snakes getting eaten.
I did. I thought it was very funny, but the imagery was just horrifying, which is maybe why I won't see African Cats, or why I won't put it at the top of my list, because seeing primal, like nature at its most primal, is just very, very disturbing to me. It's too much chaos, Kevin.
Well, the Disney nature stuff, they do a really good job. It's G-rated, so I mean, they do a really good job not having, you know, they're not like eviscerating an antelope while the children, like, oh, kids, let's take the kids to the, oh my god.
But then I wonder, is that good? I mean, shouldn't we, if you're going to make a documentary about African cats, shouldn't we be seeing them basically cutting loose? I mean, we were kind of talking in the break about the randomness of Mother Nature's universe, and yeah, everything that is illegal for humans is basically expected of animals.
Yeah, and they're going to murder you at the moment's notice.
Exactly, and maybe that's what we need to see. I mean, it kind of creeps me out, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, aside from the real psychotic people who keep lions as pets, and if you've seen the documentary Elephant in the Living Room, it's an alarming number of people, at least in the U.S., who keep extremely dangerous animals as pets. But aside from that, you know, sort of semi-psychotic branch of human reality, I don't think there's anybody out there who's going like, oh, these cuddly little lions, they're not going to hurt anybody.
Except for the guy from Grizzly Man. May he rest in peace. Well,
he was a little bit goofy. I loved Grizzly Man as a documentary, but yeah, Timothy Treadwell was not quite right in the head.
No, but that is a great film. And it's, I guess I kind of like, I want African Cats, still narrated by Samuel L. Jackson, but directed by Werner Herzog, and I want the narration to be about the existential dilemma and randomness of the universe.
And then they could have Randall and Samuel L. Jackson co-narrated.
Exactly. And look, you still have the song by Jordan Sparks, because apparently she sings a song called "The World I Knew."
The world she know. Wait, did she? She didn't like come from like, I don't know where she came from, but I sure as hell wasn't like the African savannah living with the lions or something like that.
That's where she's been for the last 2 years.
It really?
Yeah, that's where they had did you not see that audition episode of American Idol? They went to the savannah specifically.
And you have like a wildebeest coming up and going, Simon going, that's terrible.
Well, they still do Aretha Franklin, the wildebeest. And they all do Fallen by Alicia Keys.
Wow. So really her show, her song is The World I Knew?
I believe so, yeah. I'm She sings a song called The World I Knew. But yeah, I don't think she
Isn't
does
she
know
like
this
from
world.
Philly? She's like, I mean, she's... I have to look up now where Jordan Sparks is from, because I'm pretty sure she did not live with lions on the savannah.
Exactly. And unless she's kind of addressing the random violence and chaos of the savannah, then I don't think she knows it all that well.
Well, I mean, she like spent time with like the Jonas Brothers. I mean, that's not like exactly the world she knew. I mean, okay, she's from Arizona, for Christ's sake. Unless she's like, well, it's a desert.
Well, you know, Jonas Brothers have often been referred to as the world's most dangerous game.
Have they? Well, by whom?
Justin Bieber.
He's gonna do that. You know what? I would love to see a documentary. I'm sure this is a beautiful documentary. It's the Disney nature people do a good job, but I am sure I would prefer to see the Jonas Brothers and Justin Bieber, and throw Jordan Sparks in there as well. Just drop him into the savannah with the lions, and see what happens, and then let Randall narrate the whole thing. And it'd be like, he'd be like, oh, here's those nasty Jonas Brothers. Oh, my God. The lion just ate his head. You know what I mean?
Whenever Disney are ready to stop making money, they can ship in all their stars. I'm going to defend Justin Bieber. I've become a believer after seeing Never Say Never, if that's what the movie's called. So let's keep him safe. But yeah, Jordan Sparks, the Jonas Brothers.
So wait. You're thrown down for Justin Bieber, but you think the Jonas Brothers are full of shit?
Yeah, I kind of have to. They kind of, the promise ring stuff, really? I don't know.
Well, one of them's married, so he's at least getting some.
Oh, really? How old are they? Well, I thought they were like 17.
They're like 45 years old.
Oh,
no,
really?
No.
These fads move so quickly.
Yeah. No, Kevin Jonas is the one who's married. I got kids, and I get Disney Channel stuff all the time. Kevin Jonas is the one who's married, and he's, I believe, the oldest. But he's in his 20s. He's older than you, I'm pretty sure.
Wow,
I mean, he's not like 17.
Wow, well, there you go. Well, where's that album? I want to hear that gear, the post-wedding night album from the Jonas Brothers. I'm done with this promise ring stuff.
The it wasn't as good as they said it would be song. Like, I wish I should have nailed the hooker at my bachelor party song.
Exactly. Why is that not on the Sweet Life with Zach and Cody? Why are we not seeing that?
You know, here's the thing, and this was something about the Jonas Brothers, and I think it's because they span an older age. They're not like they didn't all start when they were 14. There's several years difference between them, and they're older, so they've kind of gotten over that I'm gonna rebel teenage hump that most kids, famous kids, get to know. I don't know. I think they're smart enough to not to go too far in that.
Sure.
But
I'll take your word for it. I didn't, you know, I haven't heard from them in the last 28 years or something, apparently, because now they're in their late 40s and married and bitter and divorced and all that kind of gear.
They're drinking beer and they got their wife beater shirt on.
Exactly. They're doing the reunion tour and it's all depressing and they can't sell out any venues and they're getting into fights with their roadies backstage.
They're playing state fairs around the
country. I want to see that Disney documentary narrated by Samuel L. Jackson.
And Randall.
Yes.
And Randall. Oh, look at the Jonas Brothers. They've showed up. Oh my gosh, they've gotten fat.
It will be sad to see a fat, bald Justin Bieber one day.
Yeah. Well, he's already got the comb over.
He does a bit, doesn't he? But just kind of, you know, the big kind of the beer belly and the look of just failure and dejection on his face. I don't know. I just... Can't they just like freeze him as he is now and put him in
He is a bit of a Leif Garrett in the making. You don't even know who Leif Garrett is, do you? You're way too young for this.
The name is familiar, but I'm Googling it as we speak.
He was in the 70s, late 70s and 80s. He was one of those heartthrobs. He was on the cover of every like Tiger Beat and Teen Cool magazine that was around. He was a good-looking kid with long, blonde, flowing locks. And then he went through puberty. And I mean, well, I guess he was like he was cool before puberty, and then when he was a teenager, he was cool. But then he like got into his 20s, and he just didn't. And I mean, it was one of those VH1 Remember the Music kind of things that they played a lot in the 90s. because they're like, he's like 15 years past his prime. And then he was just this fat, bald guy who was, and it was so pathetic because there was, they had this, on this one VH1 special with Leif Garrett, there's sort of a where are they now thing, and they brought in this woman, and of course she's middle aged now, or at the time, you know, because this was probably 10 years ago that I saw this, and they brought in this woman, and she was like, oh, and I loved you so much when I was a kid, and she even had in school constructed a bust of Leif Garrett, which is pretty impressive, the bust.
Yeah, I think. I don't think just anyone should have a bust made of them. I think they need to be like Shakespeare or Keats or something like that. Not just.
I think people should have a bust of me. That yes. would be awesome.
Well, I made my own out of just some plaster I had lying around.
Just lying around? You're like, yeah, oh, just... I need to use that before it dries. I should make a bust of myself.
And and I know your twit icon off by heart, so I just was able to fashion it.
Well, thank you. Did you see my pic? I just tweeted out pictures of myself last night. This will of course be a couple days ago when you actually hear the episode. I won a podcast award from Fozzie Bear's podcast.
Oh, congrats!
And I got a shirt, and it's a beautiful picture of me in a shirt, and nothing else, just the shirt.
Gorgeous.
Here, I'm actually finding it really quick because this is important stuff. I have to find the picture. I'm going to send it to you just to melt your brain.
Thank you. Wild. I appreciate that. It's almost bedtime here in Australia as well, so I'm glad that that'll be one of the last images awesome. I see.
It will. It'll haunt your dreams. Okay, here it is. I found it. Let's loading it up, and I'll make sure I post a link to this in the show notes. Just imagine Justin Bieber in this, and you may need to then wash your face out with soap.
Okay, just loading it up now.
But anyways, African cats, as you look at that, African cats, I'm sure it's a beautiful document. Oh, there you go. See, he saw it. And no, I'm not wearing anything under that, just so you know.
I'm glad. Sure. It's actually the facial expression that is
that's my I'm naughty. That's my I'm naughty look.
I'm definitely getting that. Wow. Well, yeah. You listeners, please look at that picture because you will not forget it soon. I'm sorry I don't have anything to resent you in response.
You don't have a half-naked picture of myself? You know what's really... Well, I hope half-naked... Now you have a half-naked picture of me. But what's funny is a couple of years ago when the movie Zack and Mary made a porno came out, real-life porno star... what was her name? The blonde with the huge breasts.
Oh, that porno star? That very specific yeah. one?
Yes, that one. Katie Morgan. Katie Morgan was in the movie. And I think like Robert Fury from Film School Rejects interviewed her or whatever. And she had, when the movie came out, because we'd given some play on Film School Rejects, she had gone and tweeted out or put on her website a link to her tag, for the website. So any article that showed up that had Katie Morgan in it, which was a bunch of them about Zack and Mary. Well, sure. The first one on there was the Fat Guys in the Movies podcast, which was linked off of Film School Rejects at the time. And in the first picture is me half naked. And I'm like, I got a real kick out of the fact that Katie Morgan, porno star Katie Morgan, has now seen half naked pictures of me on the internet.
She's slowly earning back. All the
that's right.
The reverse viewings.
Yeah, exactly. She's like, I don't think I'm getting the same thing out of it that he's gotten out of my work. Know what was funny? Oh, go on.
With that naughty look, I don't know. That could get people where they need to be, Kevin.
You know what's funny is last week when I went and finally saw Scream 4. I went to the midnight show on Thursday night. And I saw a couple people I knew there because, you know, a lot of people see movies and, you know, I know a lot of fans, horror fans in Columbus. And as I was talking to somebody, two girls, they look like they're probably like high school, college girls, a couple rows back. They said, well, are you a critic? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, well, where do you do it? What do you do your stuff for? And I said, well, I'm on TV on Channel 28. Every Friday morning, I said, I also do CD 101. And they're like, oh, yeah, we listen to you. You're Fat Guys at the Movies. And I'm like, yeah. That was kind of weird to actually be recognized by my voice.
That's very cool.
I
wish that happened to me, but the the comments I usually get on my reviews are people trying to get me fired or killed, so I'm happy to not be recognized at this point.
How dare you like Water for Elephants? what was funny is the only other time that happened is I was like half naked at the gym, and I was in the locker room and I made a comment to somebody and they're like, are you on the radio? And I'm like, yes. Don't look at my wee wee. You know, I mean, it's a little odd to be recognized when you're like naked.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's probably not a problem. I mean, it's probably something that Katie Morgan's grown to deal with, but.
Well, sure.
For a radio critic, that's not the best way to...
Well, and somebody looks like me. I mean, you know, drink it in, babe, if you really want to look. But I don't know how... And there's this very short list of people who actually want to look at me naked.
And I have joined that list tonight. So thank you.
You've joined that... No, you've just looked at half of it. I don't know. You're eager for more, is what you're saying.
Exactly, yeah. I've had a taste, and now I'm... Ready for the full course? I don't know. That doesn't really make a lot of sense, but thank
gross.
You for inducting me against my will.
But anyways, excuse me, African Cats does look like it'll be... The Disney Nature people do a good job. And then actually in the first Disney Nature movie, Earth, they have a scene where I think it's a cheetah kills some running hoofed animal. And they show it just enough to show that, yes, it definitely killed it. But there wasn't like blood and gore, so it's safe to take your kids. But it's it does show nature, you know.
You may have to explain afterwards that people and things die.
Things eat other things.
It's like, honey, there are things in the world that will try and eat you, and that's just something we have to accept as people on Earth.
Yeah, it goes back to that whole thing of people keeping wild animals as pets. It's like when people keep. Well, monkeys, you can deal with monkeys because they're still small. But monkeys are smart, man.
They'll steal from you.
Yeah, monkeys are not stupid. And the smarter an animal is, the more dangerous it is. But it's like people keep chimpanzees for pets because they're adorable when it's like bedtime for Bonzo kind of thing. And, you know, they're the diaper and they're like one-year-old chimpanzees. But when they become old, they're mean. And you know what the first thing they go for when they attack? They go for your eyes and your genitals.
Well, you know, that's how I fight. I don't know how you.
you're just like screw fair fighting. I'm going straight for the balls.
You know, you blind them and then you take what's rightfully yours. Your trophy. I call them trophies.
Trophies you wear it around your neck. How many balls do you have around your neck right now?
Right now.
Is it like a ruff? Do you time real tight so it's like it looks like it's a, you know, a collar, or do you let them hang and sway in the breeze?
I do the kind of thing that, you know, when you shrink heads, you kind of just get them because I find they last a lot longer that way.
So they look like little like robin eggs you'd find in an Easter basket kind of thing.
Pretty much. Well, that's, I mean, now you're giving away what my Easter presents are for my family for next week.
Oh, oops, that's okay. They don't listen to this show anyways.
I'll tell them not to listen to this one.
That's right. Well, I mean, I the other thing is you can put them, maybe it just depends on how hot it is outside. When it's cold, it like squunches up against your neck. And then when it's warm, it'll hang down. The necklace will.
Sure, it's like a mood, a ball sack necklace.
Wow. I don't even know how... How do we get on this?
Yeah.
Should we talk about something else? Should we talk about Thor?
Yeah, let's talk about Thor. That's, I mean, that'll surely get us away from the testicle talk.
Yes, because there's no testicles or manly elements at all in Thor. You've had a chance to see it. For people, a lot of people listening to this in the state, although we're an international broadcast, there's people listening to us all over the world. in America, Thor doesn't open until May 6th, but you guys get it a little bit early, don't you?
Yeah, we get it the April 21st, which is kind of phenomenal. It's very rare for Australia to get a movie 2 or 3 weeks before you
you're
guys
still
do.
You're still waiting for the Tyler Perry movies. If it was Tyler Perry's Thor, you wouldn't get it at all.
No. If it's Madea's Thor, that's right. If it was, you know, M-A-D-E-A, we would not be seeing it, but... Yeah, so we're getting Thor this week, and I was lucky enough to catch it last week sometime, and it's good. You know, it's that's kind of the extent of it. At the moment, it's got like a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is
everything gets that.
Yeah, I know. The first 12, 15 reviews, they're normally pretty glowing if the film's at least, you know, serviceable. Yeah. And that's what it is. I mean, I don't want to call it just serviceable because it actually does kind of strive for greatness, which I do appreciate in a blockbuster film where you know they could have just phoned it in and still made $300, $400 million. You know, yeah. they hide Kenneth Branagh and the film's very much a Shakespearean tale, and it's got a great cast, and Chris Hemsworth is really good as Thor. He's not quite as good as Chris Pine as Captain Kirk in Star Trek, but he does have
He played his dad.
I know, and that's kind of the odd link there, and I think that's kind of one of the reasons why they cast him, because they couldn't get Chris Pine for it. But he does have that similar charm to him, and he's kind of brash and arrogant, but you still love him. So yeah, it's a lot of fun, but Branagh can't really handle the action sequences, which is a shame. So maybe don't see
them
3D.
Well, we knew that from Frankenstein 15 years ago.
He did handle them in Frankenstein? Because I have seen that, but I can't really recall any action
sequences. No. I'm saying he didn't. I mean, he goes for the spectacle. He's a very theatrical director. So his action, but he went over the top so much in this Frankenstein film, at least in my opinion. Are you saying he did or did not handle them in Thor well?
No, he didn't. He really didn't. And because of that, he kind of hands the reins over to the special effects guys. So you get these very CG-heavy fight sequences and climactic sequences that don't really feel like they have any weight to them. Mm. You know, there's no real stakes in the ending, and that does kind of deflate the movie. But overall, it's really fun. And it's actually, I was much looking forward to this more than Captain America or the Green Lantern. I don't know how you kind of feel about this year's slate of superhero films, but
yeah, I grew up reading Green Lantern, okay. So I'm ridiculously excited for Green Lantern. Okay. But that's just because I've never read Thor, and the only exposure to Thor I've really had is like Hulk versus Thor, a cartoon movie kind of thing.
Right.
So I mean I'm coming completely ignorant of the entire mythology. No pun intended, but. Does it work for people? Did you read Thor?
No, I've absolutely not read Thor, and I'm kind of unfamiliar with a lot of the Marvel properties, to be honest with you. And I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a weekend comic reader, you know. I'm more familiar with DC than Marvel. But it totally worked. I mean, the realm of Asgard and all the kind of fantastical elements, I do think they explain that well, and it'll be interesting to see if they can do that with Green Lantern. And I believe it's called Oa. Is that the
kind of
equivalent?
Yeah, well, more scientifically based rather than mythology. But yeah, I guess it is sort of the same deal where it's got the one protector of many.
Well, certainly to the, you know, I mean, these days it's all about the gritty superhero movies and the ones where it's like dark and in the streets and it's all about, you know, parallels with George W. Bush's America and all that kind of stuff. So
I think they're moving away from that, though, aren't they?
Well, that's what I think, but this year with Thor and Green Lantern, these are more kind of fantastical properties to a certain degree in that it's not just about, oh, what if Batman existed in the real world, or what if the superhero, you know, was real, how would they kind of act, and what would the villains be like? They're kind of sticking more to the, like I said, the more fantastical elements. And I'm not that familiar with Green Lantern, but that's kind of the vibe I get from the trailers.
Green Lantern feels much more, it feels much more mainstream. It feels much more comic book-y, which is not a bad thing. That's what it looks like. Are you saying Thor falls more on that sort of like disposable comic book, not trying to like really give a big message or wrap the world around a reality? It's just sort of like, hey, we're just doing it. Well, Iron Man was kind of like that.
It is
a fun adventure.
It is, and it's a lot like Iron Man in that sense of, you know, here's your origin story, and then you're kind of, you know, him trying to adjust to the new world he's kind of fallen into, and then the disappointing finale. So it's very much follows the Iron Man sort of structure there. It's not as good as Iron Man. I think despite that ending, Iron Man is pretty consistently great and a lot of fun, whereas Thor has a few lagging moments. But I respect it. I respect because it really is trying for something greater than the genre traditionally allows, and it still does embrace that almost outrageous kind of Shakespearean element, and Anthony Hopkins is there chewing the scenery, and this is scenery that's hard to chew. So
did it look good? I mean, because I know when the first stills came out from the movie, a lot of people complained because they said they looked like toys. But, you know, these were production stills, no effects, no color correction whatsoever. They're just very basic stills. Did it look goofy?
No, it works. I think it okay. really does work. And I've spoken to a few different people who it hasn't worked for them. They think it's just that bit too much gaudy. But I kind of liked it. And I did like that it was that outrageous. And then when you get to New Mexico, which is where Thor, when he's cast out of Asgard, you know, for being insolent, he's sent to New Mexico to hang out with Natalie Portman. You do
that happens
feel,
all the time.
Happens all
oh,
the time.
Oh, I got to hang out with Natalie Portman and her fine ass.
There are so many Natalie Portmans just hanging around, doing their science thing, waiting for people to fall out of the sky to fall in love with.
What is that? I went to school with a lot of I knew a lot of people in science, and none of them look like Natalie Portman. I'm sorry. With her perfect makeup and just total gorgeousness,
they would have looked more like Stellan Skarsgård, and he's another one of the scientists.
Yeah, the girls did. Yeah.
Oh God, that was a rough class you were in.
Yeah. Did you see it in 3D?
I did see it in 3D.
What do you think? Well, first of all, are you a 3D fan or are you a hater?
I mean, I'm not a hater. I don't like my eyes bleeding in the movie. I mean, if that's being a 3D hater, then I guess maybe
wow.
I am.
Wow.
To be honest,
had
with
that
you,
happen. But.
In the first action sequence of the film, it's already a struggle because Kenneth Branagh doesn't really know where to put the camera. And so he's relying on a lot of CG work. And the camera is just so close to the action. The 3D is, I actually took my glasses off and I was like, I'd much rather watch this slightly blurry, but be at least distanced from what was happening in front of me than be under Thor's armpit while a bunch of frost demons are trying to take him down. It was too much. It was really too much. And I don't remember it bothering me for the rest of the film, but it's really adding nothing. So I would personally recommend for this one, you're fine seeing it in 2D.
Okay. Well, and it's converted. So, I mean, I think the conversion process is getting better. But the thing is, I've noticed just with 3D movies, take, for example, Tron. Tron, there's a lot of movement and a lot of stuff going on, but it was shot for 3D, and I think it embraced the 3D well.
Yeah.
Of course, Avatar's the prime example. As opposed to, you know, if there's a lot of movement, that's not good for 3D. 3D and IMAX are better for wider static shots because your eyes need to adjust to that. And if you have, and plus it helps being shot for 3D. Even something like Yogi Bear, which was shot for 3D. Again, I thought that the 3D worked in Yogi Bear because they weren't shooting it like the Bourne Identity or something like that.
Sure. Well, that's the thing. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're shooting it or post-converting it. You need a director and a cinematographer who know how to shoot 3D. It's not a totally different art form, but it's definitely a different... did I just repeat myself? It is a different...
Sure. No.
Different.
No, you're good.
Yeah, it is a different version of how films are made, and you need to understand the kind of complexity of it, and that composition is different. And, I mean, Paul W.S. Anderson shot Resident Evil Afterlife in 3D, and that movie was awful in almost every conceivable way, and especially in the 3D. So
well,
I would
see, I thought the 3D worked in that one.
Really?
I thought it was okay. That was one I used. I mean, it was not a good movie, but I thought the 3D was okay.
Yeah, I felt in that they were definitely shooting it for 3D, and there were certain shots in there that they were... they knew it was going to be in 3D, and that's they knew what they were doing in that respect. But I still don't think he knows how to handle an action sequence in 3D. And to be honest with you, 2D, 3D, if you don't know how to handle an action sequence and how to compose geographically action, you're going to make your audience sick. It's the law of, putting people in an intense situation where they're close to a giant screen with a lot of action going on. It's a very complex art, and it's one that I don't fully understand. I just know when I'm watching a film, if I feel a bit ill or if my brain is screaming that I have to take off my my glasses, it's all I can kind of respond to.
The only 3D movie that actually caused me to get a headache was My Soul to Take. That was the only one that really caused a problem for me. Everything else I was for the most part okay with. But I love 3D. Although what's funny is I had a chance last week or so, and anyone who knows me knows I'm a huge fan of 3D. I'm not a fan of the ticket prices. Do they charge extra in Australia?
Yeah, 3D? And ticket prices are already really expensive here. An adult ticket is about $19 before 3D.
How much? What's the exchange rate? Is that
Oh, our dollar is actually stronger than yours, so that would be about $18 American.
Wow, holy crap. It's only about $10 here for a full price ticket.
Yeah, see,
and
that's
then then it's like $13.50 or so. I mean, it's more if you're going into like the states. That if you go to like the coastal, you know, New York, I think it's like $20.
Yeah, see, well, a 3D ticket in Australia would be about $26, $27, which is, it's obscene. Especially if, if, like, something for Clash of the Titans, which is kind of my, I think, most people's go-to for bad 3D and bad post-conversion. I mean, to charge a couple $50 to see that movie as opposed to, I mean, you still have to sit through Clash of the Titans, so you're not getting your money's worth. But
it's as opposed to charging $40 to watch
the movie. Exactly. But it is I do kind of find that offensive, you know, that they would want to inflate their grosses by producing something that is almost unwatchable.
Yeah. But I don't think it's inflating the grosses. I think it's turning. I've said this before on the podcast, so I don't want to repeat too much.
Sure.
But I think that it's hurting smaller 3D releases, the ticket prices, because people are like, well, I'll go see Piranha for $10, but I'm not going to see Piranha for $15.
Whereas that is actually an optimal 3D experience.
Yeah. It was fun. Yeah, it was a good 3D experience. It was actually probably one of the better post-conversions I've seen. Although what's funny is I did get a chance to test out the 3D televisions. Simply because I was at Sears. They had a 3D television. They were playing How to Train Your Dragon. I grabbed a glass. I put it on. And then the other day I was at Walmart and they had one for Tron. And it was surprisingly affordable. It was like a $700 TV and like a $130 3D Blu-ray player. So you could have gotten the whole shebang for less than a grand.
Oh, wow.
And but the thing, I'm not sold on home 3D yet, because the 3D that I've seen, When you watch a good movie in 3D, and I'm talking something like Tron, Avatar, and the ones that are shot for 3D, made for 3D, even if they're post converted like Piranha, that's a good 3D experience. They bring the movie out of the screen. That is how I define good 3D, and they bring you into the movie by pulling the movie out of the screen and really kind of wrapping it around you. The TVs tend to push it into the screen. Just the way they compose it. And plus, because the TV's so far away, you don't get that wide, immersive IMAX 3D Tron experience. So I don't know if I'm totally sold. And the next TV I get will probably be a 3D TV, just because, you know, they're coming down in prices. I bet by this time next year, you know, you'll be able to get a lower-end 3D television for $500 or $600 easy.
Well, I can look forward to my whole family sitting on the couch with glasses on. Sitting in very rigid positions watching the same DVD. I don't know. I'm not sold on it yet.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. Because so many times I'm like cooking dinner or I'm checking email. So whereas in a, if you're in a 3D movie, one thing I found that in 3D theaters is the 3D glasses actually cause people to talk less and text less. Because you've got the glasses on, and you have to. And if you tilt your head wrong, or if you're kind of looking out of the corner of your eye, I mean, you're right. You are sort of forced to keep your head kind of rigid and watching. So there's actually a lot less chatter in a 3D movie. I've found, just on my completely unscientific.
Is that where we're at as a society now? We need to put on almost like these glasses to make people feel like they've been put in these space prisons where they're not allowed to talk and look at their phone? Is that what is required to make people quiet in the cinema?
I think so, because there are some people that are just so freaking stupid they don't understand to shut up during a movie.
Oh, it kills me. It's the worst. It's something that will puzzle me to the end of time. Well, look, if that's what we need to do, then I will be on board with 3D until the end of time.
Yeah. So, anyways, let's move on to box office. I think we've done that to death. Box office winners from last week: Rio took the deal for $40 million. This is all American stuff, so I don't know. I don't know what won the box office in your end. Thor?
No, Rio did, but with a different population, I think it grossed about $4 million to be number one.
But that's really good for Australia, isn't it?
That's solid. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, $40 million isn't the best. Oh, I think it was like 39 and change, but $40 million isn't like the best opening weekend even in April ever.
Sure.
Because I think like Fast and Furious 4 came in like at $72 million, but it was good. It was higher than studio expectations. Scream 4, on the other hand, Sorry, Brian Shirley, who was on last week, who predicted a $70 million opening for...
Oh,
he was not accurate whatsoever.
That was a big call. Wow.
Yeah, it was... but, you know, $20 million, that's not bad. I mean, people, they're like, oh, well, you know, Scream 2 did $40 million. It's like, well, you know, this is a reboot of a franchise. I think people are getting tired of just the rebooting and... The expectation, they're Hollywood, I think, oversells to themselves the fan potential of a movie, and they do it over and over and over again. I mean, Scott Pilgrim's a great example, where they're like, oh, it's a big comic book property and it's got all these fans. It's like, yeah, but the fans alone aren't going to make a movie, except for like Twilight, you know.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, we're also in the age of paranormal activity. And Insidious, which opened a couple of weeks ago, not in Australia, but in the US, I mean, that's grossed like $40 million already, and it costs like one to make.
Yeah, but so those aren't fan-based. Those are Insidious was good, solid, old-school horror. And nobody was seeing that because they're just like, oh my God, Patrick Wilson, we got to go see it.
That's how I react. That's how our household reacts.
Big Patrick Wilson fan.
Oh, I love it. Hard Candy, Little Children, come on.
Of course, you stampede towards the child molesting ones. You know, you totally ignore his entire filmography outside of the. I love his child molester movies.
Patrick
awesome.
Wilson excels in one specific thing, and that's playing an emasculated man. Watchmen. what's the one with Samuel L. Jackson? Lakeside Terrace.
Oh my God, that was an awful movie.
I don't mind it, but again, I kind of like it because it's Patrick Wilson doing his shtick.
It's emasculate. The next, if he ever shows up in a movie as a badass, you'll be like, snooze.
Yeah, the people of Australia will no longer stampede the films. We want him to be emasculated in front of the masses.
Yes. That's funny. What do you think is going to win this weekend?
So what's opening this weekend for the U.S.?
The ones we talked about.
Oh, of course.
Madea's Family Reunion. Not Thor. I'm sure Thor will win in Australia.
I know. We've got Thor and Fast and Furious 5. I mean, it's got to be Madea, you know, and maybe Water. I would be surprised if Water for Elephants cracked $15 million, to be honest with you.
I don't think Water for Elephants is going to do very well at all.
No, but I think the box office, as of this weekend, you know, with Rio taking the top spot, is up. Mm-hmm. On 2010, which is the first time that's happened this year. So, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe a $40 million opening, I guess. It's, like you said, it's kind of written it's in the cards. You can't even argue against it at this point. So unless people have turned on Tyler Perry.
Well, and there's not a whole lot of competition. I think you're right with the whole, well, everyone always says, oh, yeah, it's an uptick from this year. But the problem is in 2010, you had the 1-2 punch of Avatar and... You had this cascade of Avatar, Alice in Wonderland, Clash of the Titans, all three big hits, made a lot of money, skewed the box office up. And so finally in April was when the box office sort of started to level itself last year. So I think that's why I don't necessarily think that the box office is all that strong. It's just it was remarkably strong this time last year. And then it sunk at the end of the year. It didn't do as well. So I think you're right. I think Madea, I don't know if it'll crack 40, but I think it'll do well. It'll probably win the weekend. You think Thor's going to beat Fast 5 in Australia?
You know what? I don't, that's a hard one because Fast 5 it's a property that I think a lot of people have written off, and like we were kind of saying, I think the fans really, really love it. And there are actually a lot of fans for this movie, more than I can kind of comprehend. I wouldn't be surprised if Fast 5 actually took the box office.
Really? Well, yeah. And you're in the land of the Road Warrior, aren't you? I mean, that's...
Oh, absolutely. I think there is a big car contingent that I am not a part of, unfortunately. and Thor, I mean, Thor is a real roll of the die anyway. In regards to these blockbusters, I mean, it's got a no name. I mean, Chris Hemsworth is Australian, but he's not famous in Australia. He is not
he's not famous in America.
No, well, exactly. But I mean, if he's not famous in Australia, where is he going to be famous, right? He's from like one of our soap operas that I don't believe he was even on it for a long time. So, you know, no name actor. It's not a particularly well known property. Maybe it will do Iron Man numbers, but it's kind of hard. So I would put money on Fast 5 in Australia.
I think you're going to see it do, in America. I think you're going to see when Thor ends up opening, you're going to see it closer to Wolverine numbers, Wolverine or Star Trek numbers.
Sure.
Than you saw Iron Man. It's not going to make 90 to 100 million. It's going to maybe make 60.
Yeah.
In America. So, but that's a couple weeks from now. Anyways, let's move on. We got a Fat Guy 5. Beforehand, I do want to give, we don't have a voicemail, but I do want to apologize to Steve from Arizona who called in last week, and for some reason I thought he said Gabe. I apologize. I apologize, Steve. I now know that's not your name. Because I know him on Facebook. He's like, Gabe. And I'm like, oh, that was you? Oops.
You should just christen your listeners and your people that email in and send in voicemails. Just give them, you know,
my
new
own
names.
I'll be like, I'm here. My new guest from Quick Flicks is Aloysius.
Sure. That's wonderful. Christoph. Anything.
Christoph.
I mean, look, Steve's a great name. I mean, I'm sure Steve's a lovely guy, but I mean, Gabe is a far more interesting name than Steve.
Well, yeah. I mean, I could be like, Cuthbert has now called in and said. Anyways, let's move on to the Fat Guy 5. These are the 5 most anticipated films of the summer. These are kind of mine, and I guess you sort of agree with almost all of them.
Yeah, pretty much all of them. I mean, it's again, these are my winter flicks here in Australia.
Oh, that's right. Is it even winter? I mean, is it cold down there now?
It's getting cold. We've had like 90 days without rain or something ridiculous like that. Okay. They built a city in the desert. What do they expect? But it will be winter. So we call it the blockbuster season. But we're kind of used to hearing it as the summer movie season as well. So and yeah, a lot of these I agree with.
Okay. Well, the one, and they're all get about the same releases. It's not like you're going to get any of these like next Christmas or something like that. But the first one, and these are just sort of an order of release date, is my Green Lantern. A lot of people be like Thor. I'm like, Thor. No. Green Lantern's what I'm really looking forward to. It's because I grew up reading Green Lantern comics. I loved Green Lantern. And so I'm looking forward to this one a lot. Did you read Green Lantern? I know you said you read DC.
No. Real weekend comic book reader. So Green Lantern's out of my realm as well. So I'm kind of learning a lot about all these superheroes coming out this year. It seems interesting. I do like Ryan Reynolds. And I really like the way they portray Oa, you know, or the fantastical elements. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's another die roll.
Yeah. We'll see. I think they're going more for the tone of, and I know this will piss people off to say this, but I think they're going more for the Fantastic Four kind of tone,
sure.
A little lighter, a little more humor, not as dark. But I think that's good because that's the way Green Lantern went dark, and then he left Earth in the late 80s, and that's when I lost interest in him. I'm talking about good old-fashioned Hal Jordan from the 60s and 70s and even into the 80s. Screw Guy Gardner. That's all I have to say. John Stewart was cool, but, I mean, it was just you couldn't have John Stewart if Hal Jordan hadn't left. So this is all comic book stuff. The next one.
You're not talking about the Comedy Central host, are you?
No, not the Daily Show. John Stewart was he was the Black Green Lantern. That was his name. I think he took over the role in like sometime in the late 80s. So it was long before Jon Stewart, the Daily Show host, showed up on the scene.
Well, just in time for him to change his name to Jon Stewart.
That's right. That's what he did. He launched his entire career off of a lesser known Green Lantern.
You heard it here first.
The next one is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. I'm actually really looking forward to this just because I've seen all the Harry Potter movies. I've read most of the books. I think this has been a solid franchise that really hasn't lost steam. What about you? Do you like it?
Oh, absolutely. And I was actually a big fan of 7.1 or 7A or whatever we're kind of calling it. And I'm one of the people that thinks to cut them in half was necessary. I mean, cruel, yes.
It worked. Yeah,
it does work, you know. And two, I mean, maybe part two won't work because it's just going to be all conflict and battle and, you know, conclusion. But I think fans need that cathartic sort of epic finale. And yeah. And this is, I mean, this is rare. You're not really going to see too often an eight film series where each film grossed close to $1 billion.
Yeah.
It really was a phenomenon like no
other. Well, there's Leprechaun.
Sure. You know, Troll 2. And
Troll 2. I don't even think Troll 2 grossed $1 billion anything.
Didn't it?
not even $1 billion.
$1 billion shekels.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm really psyched for it. I think this will be the big, $1 billion grosser of 2011 and probably even more than that. So yeah, psyched for it.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to it. There's also Cowboys and Aliens. Now you're sort of dubious on this one. The reason I'm looking forward to it is it just looks cool. It also, it's unique. It's a new story. I mean, it may not be completely unique, because no story is completely unique, but it's not a sequel, remake, or whatever. Which I'm not down on that, but I just think it'll be neat to see. It's just the concept of Cowboys and Aliens. It kind of looks cool. And Jon Favreau, he has yet to really disappoint. I mean, a lot of people get down on Iron Man 2. I liked Iron Man 2.
I love Iron Man 2.
Yeah. And I loved Zathura, and I loved Elf. I mean, I love his movies. I really enjoy him as a director. And I'm really curious to see what he pulls off with this one.
Yeah, and look, I'm a big Jon Favreau fan as well. And this does, like, the concept looks really cool. And I pretty much love the entire cast he's lined up for it. Yeah. And the Iron Man films, the reason I love them, and especially number two, is that they're just so much fun. And they're really funny and very frothy and light. And they kind of dabble in this screwball comedy that I really enjoy. And I know that kind of annoyed a lot of people in number two. But something about Cowboys and Aliens, and Favreau's come out a lot and said, this is not the Iron Man films. And it's not meant to be wacky fun. It's meant to be serious. And I don't think a film has to be wacky to be fun. But this looks really dour. And I'm okay. I'm not dubious that it'll be good. I really hope it will be, but I'm kind of just a bit perplexed as to what film we are getting here. I haven't got my head around the concept. I don't know if the trailers have really sold me on what we're actually going to see. So I'm curious, but apprehensive.
Yeah, I actually like the fact that the trailers don't give up too much of the let's put this way, you're not getting really anything from the trailers, at least the early trailers. You're not getting anything from them that you don't get from the title. Because you're like, oh, look, Cowboys and Aliens. I mean, you don't know what else is happening in it. And I like that. There's too much plot revelations going on in the world today, especially with what I do. I mean, if you're like my dad who doesn't pay attention to any of this stuff, you can avoid knowing anything about a movie. But it's really, really hard with what we do to actually avoid knowing everything about a film before you see it.
Sure. And we're going to talk about a film in a moment that definitely has a trailer that exceeds in that respect about, you know, getting us excited but not really giving anything away. It's the tone that I'm not really sure they've sold me on. And I think that's really important in a trailer, is to sell what kind of a movie it's going to be, not necessarily what's in it. And I just don't know what Cowboys and Aliens is going to be. And I don't know if, you know, if I wasn't going to review the films, I don't know if I would be particularly drawn in to see that over a bunch of the other big movies coming out.
Okay, fair enough.
Unless it was called Cowboys and Aliens and Harrison Ford. And then, like, if that was the title.
Cowboys and Aliens and Harrison Ford.
That's like an extra $300 million of the gross just by doing that.
There you go. And Will Smith. Oh, wait, no, we're not doing that. The next one is Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And what I find interesting is this is the fourth one on our list and the fifth one. We're doing this in release order. There are two on this list that I put together. And, of course, you can always chime in for other things that are August releases. And traditionally, August is just a sinkhole for movies. This actually looks like we're going to have some decent flicks in August. And this one is Rise of the Planets of the Apes, or the Planet of the Apes, not the Planets. That would be a big movie. I'm assuming this is the one you said that we got the trailer that exceeds the expectations.
No, it wasn't, but it wasn't the one I was specifically referring to, but it is definitely, I was surprised at how good that trailer was. Mm. It's not something that I was particularly looking forward to, and I hate that title. I think it's clunky and ugly. but yeah, this was a good trailer, and I'm a big fan for any film where Andy Serkis is doing mocap.
Okay.
So yeah, I think his work as the monkey, which is pretty much what he's hired specifically to do these days.
Show me the monkey!
It looks cool. I'm ready for it.
Yeah, I'm totally looking for. It was real low on my radar, and then when I went and saw Scream last week, they threw a trailer of this in front, and I was like, and it's a trailer everyone had seen online, but I don't get into watching trailers online. Like I said, I try to avoid as much as I can in this industry, because I like to be wowed. Because there's a lot of trailers that'll show shit from the end of the movie, which is just stupid, you know. But I've seen that a lot. Piranha literally has the last shot of the movie in the trailer, and it's a gag. You know, but I saw this trailer on the big screen and I was like, oh yeah, I need to see this movie. This looks cool. So,
yeah, some nice work from, is it Weta Digital?
Weta Digital, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's who did the Avatar.
Yeah.
Mocap. And the last one, you want to take this one? Because I'm assuming this is the one that you're excited about.
You know what? It wasn't. I think I overstepped how soon we would be talking about it. But Don't Be Afraid of the Dark is definitely one that I'm excited for, and had a really great trailer. And it's one of those films that's been delayed for a bit too long, I think. Because I think it was shot back in 2009.
I don't know if it was. I don't know if it was shot that far. It was in 2009 that I think they announced that they were doing it.
Okay. No, either way, it does look really cool, and I think it was filmed in Sydney, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But it's Guillermo del Toro.
It takes place in a house. I mean, yeah, it was just tax breaks, right? That's all it was, right?
Pretty much. But it just looks like a classy horror, you know, classy old haunted house movie, and I'm all for that. I want those kind of fun movies, and I haven't seen Insidious yet, so I don't know how it'll compare, but I assume this will be probably the better product.
Did you not like Insidious?
I haven't seen it yet. I see it week after next.
Oh, okay, it's a good movie. It's old school horror.
Yeah, and I'm very much looking forward to it. But I think Don't Be Afraid of the Dark just has a little bit more of an impressive pedigree behind it.
Well, here's the thing with Don't Be Afraid of the Dark is I actually had a chance to see relatively recently. I mean, within the last 2 years, it's based on a TV movie. It's based on some just crappy little TV movie that aired on, I don't know what station it was. But, and it's a cheap movie. And Warner Archives, which is basically the branch of Warner Brothers that takes a lot of their old movies that really haven't gotten a whole lot of play, and they know there's a little bit of an audience, and they just slap it on a DVD and send it out there. There's no special features. They say remastered, but they don't remaster them. They don't clean up the print or anything like that. So it's blurry. It's kind of maybe, I don't know if it's struck from like 3/4 inch tape. It's not a great presentation. And it was just a real cheap thing with these real cheap puppets as the haunted creatures. But you know, it's surprisingly effective for how kind of crappy of a production it was back in the 70s when it came out. And it really looks like they're delivering a solid horror film with this one. So I'm actually looking forward to this one a lot. And Film District has come out with some interesting movies over the last couple of weeks. They're really kind of they're I think they're going to turn into what Lionsgate was back in like the mid 2000s.
So a proper kind of horror shingle.
Well, it's sort of risk takers, because I mean they also did like Soul Surfer, which isn't horror at all. But they're doing stuff that like the other studios won't touch because it might be a little bit too daring, you know, like even Insidious, which is a $1 million. I mean, how hard is it to recoup a $1 million production cost off of a horror movie? But I wouldn't have seen even like New Line Cinema releasing, you know, Insidious. It just seemed too out of the box for them.
Okay.
And then the honorable mention is Super 8.
See, this is what I was talking about.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
Yes. I mean, this would be a top my kind of most anticipated movies of the summer. I mean, this had a great trailer. Are you not that excited for it?
I'm cautious. Let's just say.
Are you worried that we're going to see some really weird, lame aliens, and everyone's going to be holding hands at the end of the film?
I don't know. It's just, I mean, everyone's talking about the nostalgia, the Spielberg nostalgia. And I totally get that because, I mean, I grew up in the 80s. So I remember seeing E.T. and The Goonies and Poltergeist. I just recently rewatched, having that sort of that flitty kind of John Williams-esque score and the kids going against something really cool. But I'm just cautious about it. And I could be totally wrong. J.J. Abrams, I think, has done some great stuff as a director, but I don't know. I don't want to get too excited about it because it hasn't totally jazzed me, but I'm sure I'll go see it and it'll like take me back to what it was like, you know, when I was a child watching movies.
See, the key thing for me for those, you know, nostalgic Steven Spielberg movies is the camera is kind of like almost wide-eyed. And that's mm-hmm. something that you don't really see often. It's something that's kind of hard to pull off. And the trailer for
As
Super
are
8,
all the people wide-eyed in the movie.
Yes, and maybe that's why as well. Yeah. You know, and that's kind of what I'm referring to. I don't mean some, you know, I'm not just referring to like the lens or something, but it actually just feels like you almost have to watch it wide-eyed with awe. And that's kind of how I felt watching Super 8. That, I don't know, it just felt really exciting to have a movie that was... that made you feel that way, or a trailer at least. So that's definitely high on my most anticipated list.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything against it. Spielberg, and of course Spielberg didn't direct it. It's J.J. Abrams, but Spielberg definitely when he was in the 80s and he was producing all this stuff like Gremlins and Poltergeist and Goonies and all that stuff. He had his hand in it a lot. Yeah. He was like a Jerry Bruckheimer, where all of the movies looked the same. They kind of had the same feel. They had the same kind of casts. You have your classics, but you also have stuff like Batteries Not Included that he was slapping his name on. And, you know, I that's the only thing that I he had like the when he was doing Amazing Stories, which was terrible as a TV show. Just awful. Awful, awful, awful as a TV show. It was almost like his hand was too much. It's like he dictated too much, but was two hands off. And so you got the Spielberg cliches, but you didn't get the Spielberg feel necessarily.
Did he have a producer credit on Mac and Me?
No, he didn't. That okay. was just a blatant ripoff of E.T., which is that's a great movie on its own. The most bizarre thing, McDonald dance. Sequence, what the hell?
All we can hope is that Super 8 matches Mac and Me.
I wish they'd remake Mac and Me.
Oh, it will be. Everything will be remade. So the reboot's coming.
The reboot of Mac and Me. And I hope and it'll be about Ronald McDonald being caught in the woods or the desert. So, all right, I think that's about it. We got to go to a break. We've had a long segment here. Again, another lengthy segment for the middle segment, which was courtesy of some great discussion from... Aloysius Morano.
Thank you.
We will come back with the fourth segment and wrap you up. And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We have had another great middle segment with Simon Morano from quickflix.com.au. Is that what it is? Is it .com.au?
That's correct. We're in the colonies, so you have to put a .au at the bottom of that.
If we just went to quickflix.com, does that take us to like an adult film site or anything like that?
You get some kid has bought that space, so I don't really know what he's doing there, but he's sitting on it, so...
Oh, okay. So don't go there. Put the AU at the end of it. Yeah, we had a great discussion. We talked about... We had a preview of Thor, which Simon had seen. We talked about that, and so you can go check that out on the radio. We had some 3D discussions about 3D televisions and some other weird things about African cats and Samuel L. Jackson partnering with Randall to do some nature documentary narration. But now we're going to move on to the next segment. What do we got coming up here?
We have the world-famous Steve D. Roundup.
Yes, again, a great sound effect. At some point, I'm going to put in like a Lucasfilm, you know, Indiana Jones whip sound. No, I won't. I'm just way too lazy for that.
I like it. It's rustic.
Yeah, it's sort of like old school. It's like watching a movie and they actually blow something up with a practical explosion, or they actually put cameras on a car and don't green screen in the background.
Exactly.
That's what we're all about. This week for DVDs, you've got The King's Speech, which, you know, are they, I don't know if they're released, I'm assuming they're releasing both the PG-13 and the R-rated version, because the PG-13 rated version went nowhere.
I think they're just going to do the I mean, we only have the, it's rated M in Australia, which is kind of between PG-13 and R. I can't imagine they'll release the PG-13 one.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a best movie of the year by the Oscars. That's about all I got to say about that. You also have Rabbit Hole with Nicole Kidman. She was nominated for an Oscar for this one.
Great film.
A good film. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. Then there's Gulliver's Travels, which was nominated for nothing.
Well, not for Oscars, but Razzie, certainly.
That's right. It did get some Razzie. But I mean, not, you know, the Razzies were not undeserved. But it honestly, it is a kids' flick. It did very well overseas. Did it do well in Australia? I think it did.
I think it did, actually. Yeah, Jack Black was here on Australia's Funniest Home Videos and on any kind of TV time he could get his hands on to. So I think it made a bit of coin.
Yeah. then there's also The Way Back, which was is Peter Weir's film about people escaping a gulag. Which I still have yet to see. They should be sending me a DVD, but I don't think I've gotten it yet. Sharpay's Fabulous Adventure. I'm sure you're dying to see this one. This is the latest Disney movie.
What is a Sharpay?
This is a character from the High School Musical franchise.
Okay.
Since that's done, they got Ashley Tisdale to reprise her role as Sharpay Evans. And it's her going to try to make it to the big city.
She's sort of the antagonist. Character.
What was that?
The iconic character.
Yeah. Yeah, the one that everybody remembers. It's right there with, like, Darth Vader, Mighty Mouse, Superman, and Sharpay. The most recognizable faces in cinema history. There's also Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Season 6. And Mortal Kombat, the movies. Those movies are coming out on Blu-ray. There's also Glee Encore, which is the... it's just the songs of Glee, which means it's Glee without the plot, which means it's Glee.
So, as a Glee fan, I do not endorse this DVD release or this review from Kevin.
At least my description of it. Well, no, but what it is, it's just all their songs. It's all their cover songs. So I'm sorry. Are you a Gleek?
I am a Gleek, but I'm a self-hating Gleek, because one week the show will be as terrible as everyone thinks it is, and then they'll pull me back with a good episode the week after.
Oh, okay. That's for another day. We'll talk about Glee. You've got some stuff coming out in Australia. We might as well talk about these again, because these are all at least interesting picks real quick.
Yeah, on DVD and Blu-ray this week, we got Tron Legacy, which is a very good film, not a great film, and kind of exposition-heavy, but certainly pretty to look at. Yeah. And The Last Exorcism, which I'm a really big fan of. This was one of my favorite horror films last year. What's that?
It was a good movie. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's surprisingly good and surprisingly funny and fun and kind of moving in the final moments and still kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. And also Little Fockers, which doesn't need to be seen by anyone.
No. Avoid that one. For the stinker, I'm going to throw down the stinker. I might get some disagreement here. Is Somewhere, which is Sofia Coppola's latest movie, about absolutely nothing.
No, you're crazy. This is great. This is really good.
Here's my summary of the movie. Where? I'm rich and famous. Where? I'm bored. Oh, I have a daughter.
Sofia Coppola doesn't make films about sad rich people, who will? Kevin, who will? No, this is... I genuinely think this is great. It's a very human movie, some really beautiful moments, and Elle Fanning is so good here. I think she deserved a supporting actress nomination.
Uh-huh. I think she does a good job. I just... Again, it's... And for me, it's a Sofia Coppola thing. Her movies are all about just people kind of flopping around the world doing nothing. And that's it. I guess that's the way. We can agree to disagree on this one.
No.
Let's do the review wrap up real quick. We have Water for Elephants. That was not screened. Neither was African Cats or Tyler Perry's Big Happy. But we're gonna, you know, they all get preemptive sucks because they didn't screen it for us. But
good
fans reviewing of those
for the both of us.
Yeah. Next week we got Dylan Dog, Hoodwink 2, and Fast 5, and Prom. Thank you so much, Simon Morado, for coming in.
Thank you
and
for
doing
having
the show.
Me. It was a
and
pleasure.
Again, you can get them at quickflix.com.au. And we'll talk to you next week.